This is Confessions of an Actress podcast, and I'm your host, Meredith Patterson. For the past two decades, I have worked as an actress in the entertainment industry on Broadway, in TV, and film. This podcast is my insight, observations, and in-depth interviews with my friends and colleagues about what life is really like in show business. Hello, everyone. Welcome to episode 78 of Confessions of an Actress podcast. How are you guys? I'm doing good. I have a great guest today, a friend of mine who I've known for 20 years, who is a two-time Emmy-nominated, Grammy-nominated Canadian composer, songwriter, conductor, music director for film, television, virtual reality, records, games, concerts, and theater. Oh my God. I adore him. I think he's just one of the most talented people out there in the business and just so nice. I've always just, you know, really over the years, like he's never really changed as a person, even with all the success. And he is doing additional music for the upcoming film In the Heights, which he's working with Lin-Manuel Miranda and my friend, Baby T, Anthony Ramos. It's just so cool to see people who you have known forever become successful. And I'm just always celebrating him. So I'm going to get right to it. This is my friend, the great, the awesome Ryan Shore.
Yes, it is so great to be with you and be chatting with you and be on your podcast. And indeed, we have known each other for a whole long time. So this is going to be great.
Is it 20 years this year?
I think it probably is, because I feel like maybe I met you around 2000. Was that when 42nd Street was starting?
It was 2001. So it's been 20 years, if I do the math correctly.
I think that's good math. That's amazing. 20 years. My goodness.
It's funny in doing research to talk to you, which I'm just looking up your bio and stuff like that on your website, which you've always had a really good website. Like, you've always been really like together in terms of that.
Thank you.
I was like, wait a minute, two-time Emmy and Grammy nominated composer, songwriter, music producer, conductor, Yamaha artist. And to me, I'm like, holy crap, that's amazing. But I always think of times when I would like be in your studio in New York, like in your little studio where you could kind of touch both walls if you reached out really, really far. Like, to me, I'm like, how far we've come in 20 years, or how far you've come in 20 years. Like, it's incredible.
Well, indeed, for both of us. And I don't even think you had to reach your arms out that far in that apartment to hit the both walls.
And it's amazing because, like, And obviously it's not like it all just kind of fell into place. You've worked really hard in your career and you've been given some amazing opportunities. But I just remember like that was like the time when I really started getting to know you, was sitting and listening to, you know, you talk about composing and what you wanted to do in the world. And, you know, Uncle Howie, your Uncle Howard Shore, who's an amazing, you know, Oscar award winning film composer. And just all of that, and just it's so nostalgic to think about that time, but also really cool to now see what you're doing in the world. So welcome to my podcast. We're going to talk about it all.
Well, thank you. It's so great to be chatting with you. And yes, I cannot believe how time flies and how people's lives progress. I was just chatting with an old friend of mine the other day from high school, who I haven't spoken to since high school. And literally the first question is like, so how has your life been? You know, it's like catching up with someone. It's just incredible how time passes. So, amazing.
Yeah. It's super cool to see people who, you know, have always been super nice and hardworking like yourself, and to see them successful. So I'm always celebrating you. And always have been, and you're welcome. And so talk to me about what's happening with your latest project, because I not only have you, who's a friend who's working on, the incredible movie In the Heights, but, the lead of it, Anthony Ramos, I worked with, when he was 19, only 19. And I call him Baby T because he's always going to be Baby T to me. But like, it's just kind of, I'm super excited about this movie coming out, because it's you and him together working on this. And I'm sure there's other people I know, but like, that is my, my jumping up and down moment watching that trailer and knowing that this is coming out. So let's start there and talk about In the Heights a little bit.
Well, I love how small a world it is, that there's all those connections.
Yeah.
So In the Heights, the movie is amazing. I cannot wait for it to come out. I cannot wait for the world to see it. It looks phenomenal. It sounds phenomenal. I'm in love with the movie. and I am so incredibly fortunate to have been brought on board by my good friends, Alex Lacamoire and Bill Sherman, and who are executive music producers for it. And they reached out to me. Well, now we've been through the pandemic. So before the pandemic, and it was a call that was kind of out of the blue. And they just asked if I'd be willing to work on it. And as I started working on it, they gave me more opportunities to do more things. And so
you're doing additional music for the movie.
Exactly. Yeah. I wrote additional music for the movie, and also was able to work on some of the other score pieces that I did not write, doing orchestrations and also working on the songs, which I did not write, but doing some additional arranging and orchestrating. And then I also did some conducting of the orchestra for all of the above.
Oh, my God. That's amazing. And so you don't know Lin-Manuel prior to this at all. You just knew the producers.
Well, I don't really know Lin, although I've met him before. There was another project that I worked on that Alex Lacamoire brought me on board for. I'm so grateful to Alex. And it was a Lin-Manuel project where Lin and his family went to Austria on a family vacation, and they went to the original locations where they filmed Do Re Mi from The Sound of Music and recreated all those scenes with his family. And then Alex brought me on board to recreate all the music for that and work with all the vocals that everyone sang and bring it all together. And
was it just for a family vacation video, or was this something that people can see?
People can see it. I don't really know the exact origins of how it came about. But my understanding was that they were on a vacation and decided to have a lot of fun and create this. And it can be seen. It premiered on the Ellen Show a few years ago. And I'm pretty sure if you go on YouTube and type in maybe Lin-Manuel Miranda, Do Re Mi, I think it would come up.
Oh my God, what an interesting, this is what's so funny, Ryan, and that we've been in this business so long. What an interesting way to get introduced to Lin-Manuel or to, you know, the producers of In the Heights, the music producers, and then to have that spin into the opportunity to do additional music for the film. That's where I kind of geek out about how funny this business can be and how random it can be, right? Where you can have like the most like, I don't know, random or strange connection, and then all of a sudden, like a few years later, it'll turn into a huge movie.
Absolutely. And speaking of those types of connections, the reason that I know Alex Lacamoire is because we went to college together at Berklee College of Music. And I forgot what year we met. I'm guessing it was around when I first got there, which I think was maybe around, well, I got there in 1992. And I feel as though maybe Alex and I met in 93. And so Alex and I have known each other for 28 years, at this point.
Oh my God.
And, speaking of watching careers develop and how time passes, Alex has done just universally phenomenally. It's just so impressive, and he's so incredibly talented. And I just met Alex, I think, through a buddy, you know, when we were back in college, and we used to go in practice rooms and just jam, you know, and play some jazz tunes. And then when we moved to New York around the same time, then we started working on other projects in New York, you know, like musical theater projects and albums and things. And yeah. So it's just amazing how it all progresses.
It's really one of those things that I don't know if you ever get a chance with your busy schedule to do any teaching or master classes or anything or talk to kids, but they're always asking me like, how do you do it? What do you do? And I'm like, listen, it's like kind of unfolds in this way where this is a business of relationships and it's a business of obviously skill, hard work and all those things, but there's no linear path that you, I mean, there kind of is, but there really isn't, right?
I agree. Yeah.
You just kind of go with it.
It is absolutely a marathon and not a sprint. And
yes.
I tell students that very same advice. And it's something that I've noticed, you know, like when I moved out to LA, and which was now, I think about 18 years ago, and I would go to parties or events and I would see, you know, other people in our industry and, you know, people who are, you know, trying to work their way up and get opportunities. And sometimes it was the people that I think were like sort of hitting it the hardest, you know, that were sort of like really on and, you know, meeting everybody and talking up a big game. Some of those people I found were sort of the first ones to leave the industry because I think they
burn out a little bit. Yeah.
They burned out. So I think it's just really important to view it as this really long lifetime, you know, of work and career and don't burn out and be in it for the long horizon.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, you're a lifer. It's something that's in your blood. And speaking of that, I mean, going back to your childhood, like you have this uncle who's an incredible film composer. Was he a huge influence on your reason for being, you know, being in music at all, for going to Berklee School of Music and in the beginning?
Yes, he was a massive influence on all of that. I didn't really know Howard when I was growing up because he lived in New York. You know, he was doing Saturday Night Live around the time I was born. And
just a tiny show.
Yes. Howard was the original music director for Saturday Night Live, and he wrote the opening and closing theme and hired the band. And so for me, Howard was always like the famous uncle that I hoped would show up at like bar mitzvahs of the family, that, you know, like you would just hope that
you would
see him at like a family event. But I didn't really know him very well. I think I had visited with him a few times when we were growing up. But I knew of him and I knew that he was a composer and I knew that he played saxophone and he was into music. I thought all that was really cool. And and then when I got into music, which was in the seventh grade, I needed to pick an instrument and I picked saxophone, partly because of Howard, partly also because of the saxophonist in the Muppet Show.
it was also Rob Lowe's instrument in St. Elmo's Fire. So all, like, you know, all the chicks liked him. So that was like, it's like the cool saxophone is like, you know, we're the same generation. So like saxophone is like the cool, absolutely cool instrument to play. Like it was like sexy, right?
I totally forgot that Rob Lowe did that. That's awesome.
See, I had to remind you.
Yes. Exactly. I thought it was a sexy instrument and I thought it would be something, you know, cool. And then I think for my 13th birthday, Howard got me a keyboard. And that was the very first time I had ever had a keyboard or a piano or anything with piano keys in the house. And so,
oh, wow. Okay.
So it was a huge influence, just to have the instrument and, God, I could reminisce for hours just on what it was like having that instrument. But that's when you know
that is something that is a part of you and your passion. Like some kids can have a piano in their house their whole life and never touch the keys and never have it affect them at all. But the fact that you got that and even at, you know, not that it would be, not that 13 is a late age to start playing piano in any way, shape or form, but like that was such a huge thing for you.
Huge. And especially because my instrument, my principal instrument is saxophone, because I'm going to state something obvious, but the saxophone really only plays one note at a time. And so the idea, unless you're doing multiphonics or advanced techniques and, like, you know. So,
yes.
Yeah. So, you know, to have a keyboard where I could actually explore harmony was just, it was just so huge. It was so mind expanding, you know, because on the saxophone, if I want to outline harmony, you know, you can arpeggiate and, you know, outline the harmony, but to actually go on a piano and play a major chord or a minor chord, I mean, you're going to laugh, but, you know, if you go back into the mind of a 13-year-old, I mean, I didn't really think I invented these chords, but there was a part of me that was almost like discovering it all without somebody showing it to me. And I was like, that's that sound, you know, and I'd hit three keys together and go, that, I recognize that sound. That's so cool, you know. And what I was discovering were all the, you know, the basics that I only had picked up by ear. So it was a very magical
time. But you grew up
time.
In a musical, yeah, and it sounds like it. And you grew up in a musical household, it sounds like. So was there jazz being played? Was there classical? Was there, you know, were your parents playing any instruments?
Well, it's funny you mention that because there actually was not. There was really no music really being played around the house. My parents were not into music. I have two older brothers, and my middle, I'm the youngest of three. And so my middle brother, Adam, is also in music. He's on the record label side, and he produces events and manages artists. And he was into the Beatles and all kinds of other music. So I heard that music coming from his room. But other than that, the only, you're going to laugh. The only two times that I really remember music being played around the house is when my parents had company over, then they would put the record player on to set the you know, the scene for having company. And the album they always played was the Barbra Streisand Guilty album.
That's a very interesting choice, parents. But that's, you yeah. know, it's funny that you and your brother both are in music, but you didn't have, I just imagine you had this incredibly explosive musical household.
No.
Because I remember you saying that your brother was in music as well. So I'm like, oh, I'm wondering if, you know, that was just kind of a part of the atmosphere, but no. So that lends itself to, if it is your passion, no matter what's going on in your house, you're going to kind of find it. I feel like, or if you find it, you're going to latch onto it. Like you did the piano and the saxophone and your Uncle Howie. And
totally agree.
Sorry, Howard Shore. I don't know you at all, but you've always been Uncle Howie to me if he's listening. So I apologize if that doesn't sound respectful. I have such a huge, massive respect for him and all he's done, but to have your uncle be so famous for music and then have you and your brother, I just think that's so fascinating.
It's been a massive inspiration. You know, he was the one who recommended Berklee College of Music because he had gone there. And then he was the one who gave me my first professional job when I graduated from Berklee. I moved to New York and started.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah.
I remember you talking about that.
Yeah. So huge influence. But it's also kind of funny because my family, you know, the other members of my family really only have had one reference as to who a film composer is or what a film composer does. And that was my Uncle Howard. And so when I told my family, hey, I'm thinking of pursuing this, you know, I want to do music professionally and I'm interested in film scoring. And I think in their mind, they were like, oh, well, they only know one film composer and he's extremely successful. So maybe in their mind, they're thinking, Well, all film composers are extremely successful. So so they were like, oh, well.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so you're going to go into that. And they're like, oh, he's going to do great. And I remember thinking, like I'm really appreciative massively for the confidence and support from my family. But at the same time, I'm thinking, you know, maybe you guys should worry about me a little more. Because,
but you shouldn't set the bar so high for me,
yeah.
Because God forbid I don't become Howard Shore or, you know, or John Williams or any of these incredible people that we all know.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, oh yeah, I'd like but to be a director. Well, Steven Spielberg is a successful director. Okay, great.
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of funny because that actually kind of it lends itself to a couple conversations I had about people who are Hollywood families or have somebody in their family who, you know, you happen to have the same last name as your uncle. So it's like, oh, you are a Shore. So you must be, you know, you kind of have to live up to that person or maybe be in his shadow. But he really helped you and supported you in your quest. But I remember you saying like he really wanted you to get there on your own. Like he did give you your first professional job, but I remember mm-hmm. there being like, you know, you have to put in the work for it. Right. Am I remembering 100%. That correctly?
You are. I love that you remember that. You are 100% correct.
Yeah. Cause I found that respectful. Mr. Shore, I can't call him Uncle Howie now, Mr. Shore, because I remember him saying that, or you saying that he had said that to you. And I thought, wow, that's, you know, that's honorable. I think that's great. I think that's showing that, you know, yeah, I will help you with some connections or yeah, I'm going to give you your first shot, but I want you to, you know, do the work.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, he never had me doing things that were really low level assistant type stuff. Like I was never just getting lunch orders or emptying the trash bins or, you know, running out for coffee. He always gave me jobs to do that if I weren't the one doing it, then somebody who does that job professionally for a career would be doing it. And so when I started out, I was doing copy work. And doing a ton of it, you know, for Howard. I did that, I think, on maybe, doing it from memory, but maybe about 10 or 12 movies. And
oh, wow.
And I was preparing, you know, all the sheet music for the orchestra and all the printed scores and booth copies. And so, yeah, I mean, for every movie, there was probably, I think I counted, there was usually around 5,000 pages of sheet music, you know, per movie.
And, oh my God.
And every, as you know, every single note gets played. And so if there's a mistake, it comes out, you know, nothing, you know, you can't
and
miss
was
a note.
There, you know, I'm going to ask this, was there a mistake that you made in copying it?
You know what? I am so proud to say that there really wasn't.
I can't imagine with your work ethic that there would be. I kind of didn't even need to ask that question because I knew it was going to be no. There isn't. In a humble answer, there was no mistakes because that's the kind of, you know, that's the kind of person that I know you to be and the kind of, you know, artist and that's kind of what you need to be if you're in that position, right? You need to do the best that you can, and you're surrounded by not only your uncle but these incredible musicians, these incredible, you know, producers, and I imagine that was just such a rich experience to be on those films.
Completely. And I was very nervous, and I you know, when you're starting out a career and you have no gigs and you have nothing on the horizon and you have no income and you have no resume and, you know, it's like you don't really have anything, then
yeah.
All you really have is your talent, whatever you may or may not possess, and your work ethic, you know. And so I killed myself on those projects because I had everything to prove And I had
absolutely
so much time on my hands because ain't nobody else was calling. So, so I cannot tell you how many times I proofed all of that copy work that I did for Howard. I would proof every single page of music like 8 times. And so by the time it got played, I mean, actually, it's a whole story unto itself as to how that sort of came about, which I'll try and say it, you know, quickly. But it was like Howard brought me on for 1 day of employment. That was his offer when I graduated from college. And he said, why don't you come to the office and you'll see how you like it. And he only offered me 1 day. And I came in
He was testing you, it sounds like.
I think he definitely was. And I came in for that day, and what was going on in the office was that he was doing a concert. He was preparing a concert of all of his music. It was like a retrospective type of concert. And at that time, I don't think he had done very many of those. Now he's performed the Lord of the Rings, you know, scores all over the world many, 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 many times over. But at that time, he hadn't really done that. And so there was all of this sheet music from previous scores. We were creating suites from Silence of the Lambs and Philadelphia and Mrs. Doubtfire and like all these movies that he had done. And all the sheet music was going to a copyist to prepare, you know, for the concert. And my job was just to come in and just oversee the flow of that music, making sure that the copyist has what they need. And I remember being very aware of this concert and the needs of the concert. And at one point, Howard left the office to go do a recording session for a movie he was doing. And so he was sort of out of the office for about 2 or 3 weeks. And I was just in the office looking at all this sheet music that needs to get recopied. And I just thought to myself, I'm going to take it upon myself to copy one of these. No one's asking me to do it. I'll just do it. And so I learned how to use Finale. And I put in one of his scores, and I literally had to learn the whole program from scratch. It was like, okay, how do you create a stave? And then I'm like looking through the manual, and I'm like, oh, okay, so you click on the stave tool and you double click, and okay, how do you create a key signature? I mean, it was like literally just learning it from scratch. And then after about a week and a half, I had put in the score, and I brought it over to Howard at his recording session, and I said, hey, Howard, like, here's a score that needed to get, you know, recopied for the concert. And he looked at it and he said, you did this? And I said, yeah. And from that, I then ended up doing about half the copy work on that concert. And
that's so awesome.
Which was so great. And then when we went to go do the rehearsal with the orchestra, which was in Spain, in Seville, I flew, you know, halfway around the world to get there with all this sheet music. The orchestra is tuning up. I was sweating bullets. I mean, like,
oh my God.
there was nothing left that I could do. I mean, like, all the sheet music is now on the stands, and either this thing is going to sound right or it's not. And I remember, like, sitting in the audience before the rehearsal started, and I'm hearing, like, the musicians, like, practicing little sequences, you know, little segments and phrases and passages from the various scores. And as I would hear like an instrument, you know, play like something from one of the scores, I would go, oh, that sounded okay. You know, oh, thank God. You know, like I recognize that phrase and that didn't have any mistakes in it. And that's
amazing though. But that is your work ethic to take it upon yourself to first of all teach yourself Finale and just do that for your uncle and then have him look at it and go, oh my God, you did this? Like, that's amazing. That probably was the thing, the moment that was like, okay, this kid's, you know, he's got what it takes and I'm going to challenge him more. But then to be sitting there and waiting for them to play the song must have been, you know, and I'm not a musician at all in that way, but I must have just been, your stomach just must have been in knots. So what happened when they hit the first note?
So then Howard gets up on the podium. He calls up one of the suites and a one and a two and a here we go. And the orchestra starts playing. And it sounded exactly like it did on the soundtrack and the albums that I was listening to when I was working on it. And it was almost like the clouds parted and the sun shone through, and I was like, oh my God, it worked. Like,
it works. Yeah.
You know, the orchestra sounds correct.
Oh my God. It's just to hear that story is amazing. It's such, that's so awesome.
That was really the beginning. You know, it's like then there ended up being no mistakes on any of the work that I did. There were some with the other copy work that I didn't do. And from that, the next movie that Howard had, he asked me if I would just do all the copy work for it. And that's really what started my employment with him, was to do that, which later turned into orchestrating and then later turned into some music producing. And
that's so awesome.
I owe everything to him. I mean, like, you know, the inspiration and also the opportunities in the beginning of my career.
He gave you, and this is where I have a lot of respect for him, because he gave you the chance, but you stepped up. Like, nobody told you to do what you did. No one told you that you had to, you know, they weren't spoon feeding you. You were taking it upon yourself to do what needed to be done, because you had such a respect for him. It's what you wanted to do. And to have him as a mentor in this business, oh my God, it's amazing.
Totally.
And that did shape you, but also you were such a part of it in your hard work. I remember when you got your first movie, mm-hmm. which I believe is Prime, right? That you scored by yourself, right? That you did everything yourself. Am I remembering that correctly?
That is one of my earlier movies. And I did do everything myself on that. But actually, that was my first studio feature.
Studio feature. Yeah, I remember that. Okay.
Where it's like a movie for a major studio with big stars that came out in wide release. And that was life-changing. I mean, I couldn't believe I was scoring a movie that starred Meryl Streep.
Exactly. I remember that. I was like, oh my God, this is it. Like, this is like, you know, but it's what you were talking about. It's a marathon, not a sprint. There was a lot of things you did before that. You actually, I think around the same time I was in LA working with Chris Pine, you had worked on a movie.
Yes.
scoring with him. Remember that? And I was like, oh my God, it's such a small world.
Yes. I met Chris through you because you were in Princess Diaries and
yeah.
And I came to, you were kind enough to invite me to, I think, one of the screenings of it. You know, I don't know if it was the official premiere, but it was a screening in LA. And maybe that was the premiere. I'm not really sure.
There was a few of them. So I definitely was, it definitely wasn't the big red carpet one at Disney.
I don't think so.
I only remember that because my parents were my date.
I love
but
that.
But I do remember introducing you to Pine Sol, and that's my nickname for him. But Pine, he was, he did the movie where he played, this is before he was, you know, got his big, big break with Star Trek. It was, he was playing a blind guy. I remember that because I saw the movie and it was so long ago, but I remember introducing you guys. So it's
yes.
It's, yeah. That was,
I remember, I remember meeting Chris and I just thought to myself, like, I don't know, there's just something about certain people, you know, mm-hmm. And when I met him, the overriding thought that just like smacks me across the face is, wow, he is going to be a massive star. You know, like when I met him, first I saw him in the movie, he was fabulous. And then met him, you know, afterwards through you. And I remember thinking, he will be the next Brad Pitt.
Absolutely.
You know, so handsome and so ridiculously talented. I mean, everything I've
and
seen
just
him
a nice person.
Fantastic. And a very nice person.
Yeah, and also comes from a quote unquote Hollywood family. His dad and his mom
are
both actors, Robert Pine, and you know, just all around good people. And so to have that connection is just it's crazy. And you know, I have yet to be in anything that you have scored, or you have yet to score anything that I've been in. But
almost.
I'm hoping
we were
that
almost.
Oh wait, what was it?
Do you remember there was a movie that this was a little while ago, and it was an independent film. I don't remember the name. You were in it, and there was a score that was written for it. However, okay. The head of music for the studio was exploring the idea of not using that score and bringing me in to rescore it. And I flew to New York to meet with the filmmaker. His name was Fraden.
Fred Manoogian?
Fred Manoogian. That's right.
That's it. Yes, I remember. That was with Ione Sky. That was a film that I did. Oh my God, it was a long time ago, but oh my God, I guess I forgot that. Isn't that funny? We've been in the business too long, Ryan. That's when my brain's starting to go.
I just remembered it now, but so we almost worked on a film together.
Almost. And that was, yeah. that was quite a while ago. So we have to, we got to remedy that soon, but
we do.
Oh my God. You've just been working on so many things and doing so many wonderful things. Tell me about what is being a Yamaha artist? What does that mean? Do they sponsor you?
Yeah. So, I endorse Yamaha products. And so they call me a Yamaha artist. And I'm on their website.
Oh my God, that's awesome. if you were a race car, you would have Yamaha like on the side as you like raced by.
That's right.
You don't have to wear Yamaha like on the back of your suits when you're conducting or anything.
It is a requirement that it's like a NASCAR jacket and it's covered in Yamaha symbology. No, I don't have to do any of that. You know, Yamaha is the only company that I have endorsed, that I have an endorsement, you know, with. And I actually wanted to endorse them because so many of my instruments are Yamaha. I genuinely love their instruments. You know, like all of my saxophones are Yamahas, keyboards, you know, like studio equipment, so much stuff. And so... I was introduced to them, and then we began this process of exploring the idea of becoming an artist, and then they asked me if I would do it, and I love them, and I love being associated with them.
And that's awesome because a lot of times, you know, in our industry, we could do commercials for things or whatever, and you'd be like, yes, buy this. You know, buy this face wash or whatever it is, and you're like, I don't really use it, but to have it be something that you really love, like, you know, a company that you actually use anyway is awesome, and I think that's so cool to be endorsed. That means you've really made it. Like, I think if you're endorsed by a company, I don't know. Everybody has their own like staple. I feel like if like Danskin or somebody or LaDuca, you know, I know Phil LaDuca, I love him, but if he was to say, Meredith, I want you to endorse, you know, my company, and I wear all of his shoes anyway. It's the only tap shoes I wear is Phil LaDuca's shoes. I would be like, I've made it. I can wear like a big LaDuca sign on my back when I'm dancing. That's amazing.
I recall, and this goes back to our New York days, but I seem to remember that you did an advertisement for...
I did. I did his first ever ad.
There you go. So you already have endorsed them.
I guess I already made it 20 years ago. I don't have the sign on my back. But I did get free. I did get free shoes. I got free, and Phil is very nice. He gives me free shoes all the time. So thank you, Phil LaDuca.
There you go.
Well, you have done, I mean, honestly, Ryan, you have done so many things in the business already, but what is there? I know you keep saying it's a marathon, not a sprint, which is actually something that I always say. I want to be like Betty White. I just want to keep acting and keep performing like until I'm like 90.
Love
her too. But what is something that you have not yet conquered that you feel like you want to do as a film composer, as a, you know, as a songwriter, as a producer, any of it?
Oh boy, there's so many.
I'm glad the list is long.
Yes. One day I would love to write a musical. I've never done that. I'm a bit intimidated by it because I have so many friends who are in theater and are composers, and I'm aware of the gestation period of how long it takes to create a show and go through its paces before it can, you know, be seen by an audience. And so it sort of makes me nervous, you know, about diving in, because I feel like whatever I commit to would probably be like the next 10 years of my life if I were even so fortunate for it to go through its paces over 10 years.
That's it, Ryan, that's it. That's the thing we're going to do together. if I'm not, 60 years old by the time or maybe I'm, even get cast in it, but that could be it. I think that you absolutely could write one. And I think even the fact that it makes you a little nervous is awesome. Cause that kind of, for me, that's my compass. Like when I think of something that I want to do and I'm a little scared to do it because I think maybe is out of my reach or maybe it's something that I don't know if I can do that, I think that is a really good sign, right? Because it's a challenge.
I think, I agree. I think you're right. There's something in that feeling that it's that everything to prove feeling. And it's also the feeling that you're not safe, like this, you don't necessarily have this, this could fall apart.
That's this business, right? You're never really, unless you are like a crazy huge egomaniac, which you are not, but you could be. You have, Emmy nominations, Grammy nominations. I mean, the things that you've done, you could hang up your hat tomorrow and be very proud of yourself and not ever challenge yourself and do something that scares you. But that's what, for me, that's what the business is. That's a kind of a super exciting part of it.
Yeah, I agree. I feel like I've had the type of career that has sort of been like a slow, steady, progression where, over time opportunities have become larger and, it's sort of been like a slow and steady type of thing where I don't feel like I've ever been like an overnight success where just this one thing happened and it just blew everything up into a different level. By the nature of that, I feel as though when opportunities have presented themselves, not that I haven't been nervous for some of them, but by and large, I've felt ready, I've paid a lot of dues and I've worn a lot of different hats and I've gained experience, not because I'm any more special than anyone else, but just because I've been doing it for a lot of years and opportunities mm-hmm. come up and then you do those things and then you learn from them and you grow, the same that would happen for anybody if they, got opportunities.
It's really staying in it. Yeah. It's going back to what you were saying about being in parties early on in LA and having those people who are, walking in the room, guns blazing. Sometimes, they don't have the wherewithal to stay the course because mm-hmm. it does take time. And any overnight success, you think about going back to In the Heights, look at Anthony Ramos, who has been, he's been plugging away at the business since he was 18, 19 years old. Yes, he got the golden ticket of Hamilton and then he got, the golden ticket of In the Heights and knowing Lin-Manuel, I think is, such a huge and fortunate thing, but he's a hard worker and he has been in the game for 10 years. And it is those people who it's rare that you get an overnight success, quote unquote, overnight mm-hmm. success, but mm-hmm. it's usually like 10 years. It's usually about 10 years. And that's like the gestation period of a musical you were talking about earlier,
yep.
or sometimes it's 20 years. Sometimes it's a steady and slow pace. But for me watching you, I feel like you've always been working, but I know that there's been gaps. I know that there's been moments of like, when's am I going to get another job? But
sure.
to me, it always seems like you're just slow and steady, constantly working.
Well, knock on wood, I would say, and again, really knock on wood, for the last, maybe 7 years or so. I really have been working pretty much nonstop. I don't think that I've not been on a project at any given time for at least the last 7 years or so. And oftentimes multiple projects because sometimes things overlap. But it was not always that way, particularly around the time that we first met. When I was living in New York, I mean, opportunities were far and few between, and there was a lot of sitting around on my hands. I mean, I was never sitting around. Like, I was always trying to get work. And, you know, if I wasn't working on something, then I would try and meet people. And, you know, I'm always 100% in it and doing things to try and work. But yeah, in the beginning, there was a lot of searching for work.
But I think, even with the pandemic hitting, like, that's something that's unique about you is that you potentially could work on your own in your studio, right? I mean, how has that been for you with everything hitting? I know that In the Heights was prior to that and that the pandemic switched everything around, but what have you been able to do during this time, during this 13 months that it's been?
Yeah. Well, it's funny because in a lot of ways, the way that I work hasn't really changed through the pandemic. You know, composing, or if I'm doing other things, arranging, orchestrating, working on songs, or whatever it might be, oftentimes is a very solitary kind of life. And so I'm able to do that from my studio. I do hire people to work with me on my projects, and most of them work from their own studios. And so that's able to continue through the pandemic because, you know, everyone's doing the same thing. They're all in their place doing their work. The only thing that really changed for me during the pandemic was that I usually have some people who work in-house with me, a full-time assistant. I have a full-time internship program that I've hosted for about 6 years where I've had a steady, list of interns that have been working in my studio. And so all of that kind of halted. You know, my assistant now works from his home. We had to halt the internship program because we felt it would be a little too challenging to get someone integrated into what we do if they just couldn't look over our shoulders. So that part has changed. But in a lot of other ways, really, everything has kind of been the same. You know, but that's the nature.
I mean, I imagine working with the orchestra, you can't do that. Like that feeling of getting up on a podium and being able to, you know, in a studio or I know that I think one of the times I just for some reason remember the strangest things, like you were in Prague, I think, doing like conducting an orchestra or something. And you had like pictures of you in front of this huge orchestra. And I was like, oh, my God, that seems so cool to me. Those moments that I've experienced as a friend of yours through your eyes. And I'm like on social media being like, oh, my God, Ryan, that's amazing. Those moments, I'm sure you completely miss that connection and that sound coming at you from a live orchestra.
Yes, that is absolutely the prevailing thing that was not able to continue during this time. And my God, am I so grateful that I got to do that for In the Heights, because we were doing In the Heights right when this pandemic was sort of coming on in full swing in March. And so I'm so grateful that I got to work with amazing musicians, a full orchestra, before everything shut down. So at least I was able to do it right up to the last moment, literally the last moment. I mean, it was literally like the last recording session we did, and then New York was like closed, you know, the next morning.
Thank God you were able to get that, because I can't imagine that movie without, you know, live orchestrations as opposed to something that maybe had to be canned, or, you know, I feel like they probably would have just pushed it and waited until after everything was over, because it's such a monumental score. I remember seeing it on Broadway. I remember, you know, Chris Jackson is a college friend of mine, and seeing him play Benny and be in the show. And I'm just so unbelievably excited for the movie. I'm excited for you and you know, the music that you were able to add to it and what this movie's going to do in terms of just, you know, for everything, for Baby T and Anthony Ramos. I keep having to say Baby T. And you know, it's exciting. It's exciting to see people in this business rise up, and those opportunities and that compound effect of them working, you know, a little bit here, a little bit there, like your slow and steady career that's been I think has had moments of like, holy shit, you know, oh my God, you're doing this. And I also think that those moments are still coming. You know, we're still young. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yes. Yes, we are.
And I do remember, I believe it was your 40th birthday at your house, and you told me about starting an internship program, and I got like giggly that you had an assistant and that you had like interns coming in. And it sounds so stupid, like, but it's something that I constantly kind of like even thinking about like Chris Pine or all these people who I'm like, I remember these moments of just being like, oh my God, you have an assistant now? Or like, oh my God, your face is on a poster. Like, how fun is that? It's a fun part of this business for me. I feel like that makes me just so happy, especially if they're good people.
It is a fun part. You know, I remember when I first decided to hire a full-time assistant. Prior to that time, I had hired people to do work, but it was always part-time and it was always project-specific. It was like, okay, can someone come in for 2 weeks and do, you know, do something and then we're done. And so I remember thinking that I wanted to hire a full-time assistant. And I remember saying to my fiance, Liz, I said, I think that I want to hire a full-time assistant. And she said, why? And I'm like, and literally my answer was, I don't know. I just see other people have that. And I just thought,
you're like, maybe I should have that. I think I'm at the level. I would think, Ryan, that you would have like a little giddy moment of like, I'm going to hire an assistant. Like, I'm at that level now. I don't know, like hire, like what, you know, your uncle did for you. Like, you're going to hire somebody to do copy or to do whatever you had them do, hopefully not get you coffee or, or massage your feet or something. But, you know, but having somebody, you know, having those moments and having joy in that, and not in a, in no way an egotistical way, but just a way of like, yeah, that's what I'm doing now. And isn't that cool for my 13-year-old self who got a piano from my uncle? Now I have my own studio and my own assistant, right?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's so funny because up to that point, like I was really just concerned about having enough work for just me. You know, like the thought of paying someone's salary in addition to me was a real sort of leap. Like I was thinking like, do I have enough work for them to do? Or are they going to be sitting around a lot? Like, and the real impetus for doing it was that I had signed on for my first television series at that point. Which was an animated TV series at Disney called Pen Zero, Part-Time Hero. And when I signed on for that, that was like the very first time that I really had sort of a guarantee of employment over an extended period of time, because movies are usually much quicker. You're in for 4 weeks, 6 weeks, 8 weeks, you're out, sometimes less time. But television shows are long and they're a predictable schedule. And so when I signed on for that series, I was like, oh, okay, I know I have employment for like a year. And that was what changed things for me. And I was like, okay, I'll hire an assistant because at least I know I've got this project that we can do over a long period of time. And
now that assistant is going to, you know, possibly be the next film composer, and, you know, you're passing it down.
Yeah, there definitely is a sense my phone rang. There definitely is that sort of handing of the torch, and
being a mentor now to a younger generation.
Yeah. By the way, that's a weird thing too. Like,
does that feel weird to you?
Totally. Like, you know, for so many years, I was always just counting the number of years since I graduated college. Like, I'm 4 years out of college. Well, I'm 8 years out of college. Well, I'm 12 years out of college. Eventually, the number became too large that I don't think anyone cares how many years it's been since college.
When you get to that point, it's like, okay, you're out of college. You've been out of college for a while. Let's just say a while,
right.
You know, but you are, you definitely are, you know, and as am I to some people, I've been told to my face, like you are somebody I look up to. And in my head, I'm like, oh my God, I'm that person. Like I'm that person to somebody else. And I think it's so cool. But I've always just kind of kept my head down and done my own thing and tried to find work for myself and loving what I'm doing and hopefully being a good influence on other people in terms of, you know, giving back and stuff like that. But yeah, you are that person. And I celebrate it all the time. I celebrate you and your career and your life and, you know, all the things that has been happening for you
since
I've known
you.
Thank you. And yeah. I love that. I you know, we used to live down the street from each other and now we don't. But I know that I know that, you know, when things start opening up again, you know, I have a long list of things I still want to do in this business, and I hope that someday that will include working with you finally.
And I hope so.
You know, even though you're mostly post-production and I would be whatever production.
You are.
You know, we could be at the wrap party together, you know, laughing about, you know, one day, remember when we were sitting in that small studio in New York and, you know, and then we'll be at some big LA party laughing at all the people.
Well, I look forward to that and that'll be amazing. And yeah. I celebrate your career. You know, we've known each other a long time, and I remember very clearly when I saw you in 42nd Street, and you were starring as Peggy Sawyer, and I remember watching you do all, you know, singing, acting, and dancing, and I was really blown away. Like I was like, wow. Like she's really great. She sounds absolutely phenomenal, and you know, you led the show, and you know, didn't miss a step. Like I'm not a dancer, maybe, you know, like I don't know how to judge.
I was kicking my own face. Yeah,
I doubt it. And I remember, like, because I think you and I had chatted, you know, gotten to know each other sort of around the show. But then when I finally saw you as Peggy Sawyer, I was blown away. I was like, wow, like she's really talented. There's a lot going on here. And so it's,
she's working really hard, but yes, it is kind of funny how that's such a compass in my life. It kind of brings it, a lot of things bring me back to that moment in time. And it's been 20 years. It'll be May 2nd that we opened that show. And
Wow.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy how much life has changed and how much things have changed. And I just want to keep celebrating you. I want to have that moment when we work together and have many more moments where we just get to hang out over, you know, a 4th of July party or something like we've done in the past.
I can't wait, you know, when times are healthier. I also remember shortly after you did 42nd Street, that you starred in 42nd Street, but in Russia.
Yeah.
And I remember the harrowing experience, that you had there. And I also remember when you had been asked to do it, and it's one of my, I really do think of this often, the story you told me that, I think that they had offered you the job, they had offered some type of salary. I think at that point you were perhaps happy to receive that salary, but your representation said to you, just hold tight and we're going to work out the salary. And they worked out a much more favorable deal than you had expected or been willing to accept. And I remember thinking, wow, what a success story that is, you know, that you've got this representation that is literally making your working, you know, situation all that much better. I was very impressed with all of that.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. I remember that was so early on in my career that I was scared to ask for more money. And I was being paid a certain amount on Broadway, and I was not being, you know, most of the other principals in the show were saying, I can't believe you're making such a little money and things like that. And I didn't know, I was 25. So I was like, I don't know, like, this is great. Like, I feel like I'm making more money than I ever have. And going off to Moscow, I made in 3 months my entire salary that I did on Broadway in 3 months. So that gives you a kind of an idea of what the deal that they got for me. And I was feeling in this strange way of, and you and I have always talked about business, Evan, and I've always been super impressed with how you've conducted yourself business-wise, but it's kind of like, that's a whole nother podcast, but talking about the business side of show and how you conduct yourself and how you show up and what value you have for yourself is huge. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, I didn't know that I was capable of getting that much money, but it changed my life for the moment. And it helped me go to LA for the first time and all those crazy things that happened after. That's so funny. Isn't it funny how we remember such little details of like stories and things that you're like, you remember that?
I know.
But that's my friend, why we've been friends for 20 years. Well, I thank you so much for being a guest on my podcast. I just, you know, I adore you. I wish all the best for you and in the Heights movie that's coming out June 18th, correct? I know they've been changing the date. Around,
they have, but, yeah. I think they just moved it up a week earlier.
It might be a week earlier, but in June, and I'm sure we're all going to be, you know, I'm just going to be jumping up and down in front of whatever, however I'm able to watch it if we're all, you know, in a safer place. But I hope to see
you
and Liz in a safer place when we're able to hug. I can't wait for that day.
I can't wait too.
I'm sending you guys the best always.
Likewise to you and your family. And thanks so much for having me on. It's just, like you were saying in the beginning, it's just nice to be able to chat uninterrupted for a longer period of time. So this is an absolute joy.
Absolutely. As a mom of two young kids, that's definitely, definitely a joy. But I adore you.
I love
Thank
it.
You again.
Thank you. I'll talk to you soon.
To support this podcast, make a donation, or become a sponsor, visit confessionsofanactress.com. And be sure to follow us on Instagram for our live Talkin' Tuesday series with former podcast guests. And check in every Wednesday for our bonus episodes, Wellness Wednesdays. And if you're feeling super generous, head over to Apple Podcasts on iTunes and give us a 5-star review. I really appreciate it. And remember, have vision for what you want, but be grateful for where you are every single day.